So just to get started, I think it's very important to outline the background of the project that I work with. And the Primary Care Information Project is a huge undertaking that the Department of Health has decided to basically subsidize EHR, electronic health records, in exchange for anonymous clinical data at the patient level. So since its inception in 2005, the Primary Care Information Project seeks to improve population health through health information technology and data exchange. The program supports the adoption and use of electronic health records among primary care providers in New York City's underserved communities. We work mostly with DPHO, District Public Health Office sites, where there's low income, high minority, and poor health. We receive aggregated and anonymous data from almost 3 million patients, over 520 live practices, and 2,600 providers, including many clinical data points, as well as our performance rates for quality measures. I'll get into this in a moment. Quality measures that we hard-coded into the electronic health record itself. The data is collected from about 400,000 in-office visits each month throughout all five boroughs. In terms of studying access to healthcare before and after reform, one large caveat is that all the patient data we study is from patients who have access to healthcare, which is just basically means your subset of your population is a little bit smaller than the general population who could be very sick and, as Brian alluded to before, maybe homeless or without an actual address. So we focus our efforts on improving the quality of care received, as well as analyzing where patients seek care and what the level of the care they receive is, and how the providers are adhering to the quality measures. A majority of our practices transmit three different types of aggregated data automatically every month. And thus, remember, this is a background to the tool that I'm going to introduce, the Hub Project. It's just to give an overall view of where we're at the moment. So we have clinical quality measures. These are the Take Care New York indicators, and as well as 40 other quality measures that we designed and coded, basically hemoglobin A1C tests in the last year, mammograms for pertinent patients, things like that. We get syndromic surveillance data daily, ILI, influenza-like illnesses. We can plot that over previous or outbreaks after the fact and see if our ILI data matches up, and it always does. We also have then utilization data, basically data on how the doctors are using the record. Are they locking their notes? Do they use the clinical decision support system that the Primary Care Information Project built? Then we have the ad hoc data, the ad hoc queries, basically on the fly. This is the Hub Project that I'll get into. All of this data that we get, huge amounts of clinical data every month, is pushed into a database which serves as the source of all of our projects we integrated with SAS and SPSS and all types of statistical and geospatial analysis programs. So this is a schematic that represents the flow of our automated, hard-coded monthly data transmissions. This is the basic architecture of our data intake. It's for hard-coded unidirectional measures, so one way from the practice to us. The reason it's static is because they were hard-coded at the time that the EHR was deployed, so they can't be changed, which is why the Hub Project it was necessary. Monthly and daily data is aggregated and sent to PCIP via secure FTP. We use this data for a multitude of reports, resource allocations, syndromic surveillance, pay-for-performance programs. We have an e-quits program, getting people to stop smoking. We'll pay providers for every patient you get to quit, and as well as Healthy Hearts, which is closing now. We then use this information to triage poor-performing practices and work to increase the quality of care by working with the providers and making sure their workflow is correct and they're using the EHR properly. So these are just a few examples of the monthly clinical and utilization data variables that we receive. On the left side, we have things such as BP control. Has your patient had their blood pressure checked in the last year? And if it was out of range, have you controlled it? So these are Each one of these has a screening and a control measure, most of these. So do you qualify? Are you in the denominator for this measure? And if you are, did your provider provide the proper intervention to get you into the numerator? So we have things such as lipid screenings, hemoglobin A1C testing, chlamydia, lead screening, breast cancer screening, all this stuff. And utilization on that side, really interesting stuff about how providers use the record, the number of visits, the E&M codes, the CPT codes, like how much time did they spend. We could use this information to calculate RVUs and in real time give it back to the providers and tell them how they're doing. We do monthly reports. We don't call them report cards, they're scorecards, and they get report cards as maybe a negative connotation, so it's nothing punitive. We just like to show providers how they're doing in their rates of performance in all of these measures. So as I said, the results come back in a numerator denominator fashion. We then calculate a ratio and give it back to the provider level, but we can also roll it up into any level. We can roll it up to the practice level, the zip code level, the community level, borough level, and just see overall rates of adherence to these quality measures. This is just an example of how we look at this data. So we set baseline rates for all of our quality measures, and we set it for 3 months post EHR go live, so we know that the provider has a better chance of being on the system for over 3 months and is used to it, and that workflow would not be an impetus to a poor clinical care. So just to clarify what our aims are, the Affordable Care Act requires the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services to establish a national strategy for quality improvement in healthcare. The National Quality Strategy has three aims: better care, healthy people and communities, and affordable care. To advance these aims, the National Quality Strategy focuses on six priorities. To work on these six priorities, which are on the screen, PCIP tries to provide services to both providers and patients in order to advance these aims, which is why we collect all this data, to get better quality care, and get it cheaper, and get it to where it's needed. Just to quickly show, this is real data. This is the overall performance rates for three of our key measures. This is the top left is A1C control. So if your hemoglobin was greater than 7, I know that they just changed those guidelines. I think 7's a little bit low. They think they raised it to 8. So this is one great example of why we need a tool that can subvert hard-coded queries and then update them and get data that reflects new best practices and new things like that. So what we try to do is we try to get the rates of adherence all the way up. This means that what these numbers are, they're rates. So 24% on the top right in the A1C control. That means that for this panel of providers, the end was 436, which is a small study. 24% of their patients who came in with an uncontrolled A1C then had them controlled with the proper intervention. Same goes for BP control, smoking cessation intervention. So the smoking cessation intervention is based upon a smoking status. Are you a smoker? We use a smart form. If this patient identifies themselves as a smoker, then they drop into the bucket of the denominator for the cessation intervention. And using the appropriate intervention, bupropion, Chantix, therapy, facts to quit forms, which New York sends you a box of Nicorette and helpful information on how to quit and to stay quitting. That's what this measure represents, and we've seen the rates climb from even before this study, about 14% now to 26% of their patients that identified as smokers now received an intervention and hopefully stop smoking for good. And the same goes for BP control, which we're really into cardiovascular health. And this is a combination of one hard-coded measure and two of our pay-for-performance measures. So as you can see, maybe money makes the rates go up, but they're in the 50s, which is great. Maybe it's a little easier to control BP, but this means that a patient came in presented with an out-of-range BP and received the proper intervention and then came back, got another BP test, and it was within range. And then they get into the numerator. This is a, I know it looks complicated, but it's really not. This is an internal report that something that I write things like this. I code them with the data that we have. And when someone asked me, we have a lot of field staff. What is the value? Is there an increase in the quality of care given? And for all these site visits that we get, we have hundreds of site visits a month. We have a staff of over 100. I believe 40 of them do on-site counseling and training with doctors. So just quickly, I have it here. So the purple dots represent a certain type of visit. Our quality improvement team goes out and visits a doctor. So we plot that over the date that they went, and then we like to see if the performance increased over time or decreased over time, just to see as maybe we can change our methods, our training methods, or things like that, or maybe there's a problem that happens. We can see a spike. I love spark lines. There's no X and Y axes. They're very easy to see visually if there's a big problem. As you can see, the A1C control in the bottom right corner, zero. And that tells us immediately there's a problem with the lab interface, or there's a problem with documentation. So we can go the next day and triage that right at the practice and say, do you have a lab interface? Do you check your labs? Do you review them? Do you do outside of the EHR? You know, and then we can find that out and triage it accordingly. So I'd like to talk about now the hub population system. This is the tool that hopefully we'll be able to collaborate with, and I think it speaks very nicely with Brian's previous presentation in terms of getting real-time clinical data and then relating it to geospatial coordinates and then triaging them. So this data from the hub is available in real-time. It opens possibilities to quickly and cost-effectively evaluate geographically targeted interventions and identify new key areas for relief programs. Using neighborhood queries, we are able to link the hub with many of these other data sets, allowing us to examine ecologic associations. Matched with other national and local data sets, the research potential is extremely significant. So as you can see, we aligned ourselves with the census tracts, UHF tracts, many other health data collection repositories. We want to be able to plot it over and say that our results are generalizable to your population and the general population. So this is the footprint of the hub. I do my own geocoding with the addresses. So I just plotted them quickly on Google Maps to show the spread of it's a really nice distribution around all five boroughs of New York, except for Staten Island, where I hail from. There's not a lot of Medicaid and Medicare patients. In our program, there's a 30% threshold that you have to see 30% or more Medicaid or Medicare patients. So as of August 2011, the latest numbers, 330 practices covering 1.1 million patients are on this hub system. Now, that's a subset of the 2.5 million patients that are involved in our program. And the only impetus stopping us from getting all 520 live practices on this system is time. We just register them and make sure that they upgraded to the newest EHR, and there we go. They're live. We send out test queries, and on we go. Just quickly, we wanted to show how we came up with many process flows of how to use this hub to make sure we use it correctly and appropriately. So this flow shows how we handle alerting providers. Alerting is one piece of this hub tool. With any types of alerts. And what we've done is we've used the CDC's HON alerts to create clinical questions to ask the EHR database and then get information back in real time while telling the providers what the actual alert was for and how to identify the patient population in their system who would fit the criteria for the HON alert. So quickly, I'll go into the architecture of the hub system. So it looks similar, except this is a bidirectional interface. So this is the architecture of our new bidirectional hub system. It allows us to treat disparate databases as one community, but still stratified by any number of variables at many levels: practice level, provider level, zip level, UHF tracts, ethnicities, insurance types. The reason this technology was necessary for us is essentially because practices choose to host their own data. So we have probably about 450 practices who have siloed health data, which is inaccessible from any system. So we needed to, we still get our hard-coded measures from them. However, we can't push anything out new to them unless we hard-code it into the next generation of the electronic health record that they use. There are many security protocols in place. We are not allowed to query on PHI, anything like addresses or names or billing information or anything like that. So we'd just quickly like to show the validation process of our hub. So this is a comparison of our hub data comparing the query results to existing data sources. In this study, we see that the distribution of the age and gender of our patients on the hub closely matches the distribution of the 2010 census in New York City, with women being slightly overrepresented in our study, perhaps because of they seek care more, maybe because of recommended clinical services for those age groups, such as mammograms and regular pap tests and things like that. So there is a little bit of a spike for females in our study, but basically what we try to do is say, is our population representative of the study area? So just to show an example, we have these UHF tracts hard-coded into our zip code groupings, and in the hub, we can push out queries to specific, even just a zip code or one practice or a borough or anything like that. And if you look at the red circle, I'll show you the next. The next slide shows how we can synthesize multiple data sources. This was a study sample of obesity prevalence for one practice with three sites. We looked at the 13 zip codes, so 13 zip codes surrounding the three sites that this practice has, and plotted the prevalence of obesity. Over 60% of the practice's patients travel from outside the surrounding three areas. Of the 3 square miles study area, which is surprising in New York City because the transportation is so good. But why is that? Why do people travel so much farther than they need to for a primary care visit? And that's something that we're very interested in. I'll get into that in a moment. But what you can see is we plotted the prevalence at the zip code level, and what we used as a data source for that is the patient's home zip, so we can get a rate for, we can group BMI by zip code and by their percentage of, if they are in the BMI healthy range. So one of the study examples I'd like to show quickly is a patient flow for Manhattan practices. We did one for every borough, but Manhattan is a special borough. It has many specialists. It has not a lot of primary care physicians because basically rent is so high and they're not going to practice there. So what you can see is the arrows coming in are how many patients come from the Bronx into Manhattan to get care and how many patients from Manhattan actually go to the Bronx to get care. We did one for every borough. 9% of the care given in Manhattan comes from patients who live, their home zip code is in Queens and Staten Island. No one's traveling over bridges and by boats and trains to get to Manhattan, so the percentage is very low. Brooklyn is 18% of the care given in Manhattan is to people whose home zip code is in Brooklyn, which is very interesting, and this is for primary care and specialists. Another study example, which the CDC, I hope, would appreciate, is this metronidazole recall that we used as our test pilot. We only had 8 practices at the time. So we used a HON alert. If anyone is aware of those, our Health Action Network, Health Alert Network alerts that we get as a health department, and providers get them, basically telling about outbreaks, medicine recalls, things like that. So this is how it went down. January 12th, 9 a.m., we received this HON alert regarding a metronidazole recall. The hub action plan was defined. We got together and defined a plan of action of what we were going to do to get these providers aware of this recall. So we received this alert recalling the 250 milligram tablets because many were found to be underweight. And as some of you may know, underweight antifungals and antibiotics can be severely dangerous. They can create multi-drug resistant strains of bacteria and viruses and such. So it's very important that if you prescribe such a drug that there's a follow-up and make sure that it was effective. So on January 13th, the results from the overnight query that went out came back. We found 62 patients in the last year that were prescribed metronidazole, but 6 patients, which is bolded, 6 patients were prescribed metronidazole, which in the time that the tablets were recalled. So they were actually most likely underweight tablets because there were many of them. So what we decided to do is on January 19th, we sent a message educating the providers about the recall directly to their inboxes. They have, in the EHR, they have a mailbox, and we can send them alerts. So we forwarded them the HON alert with instructions on how to identify the six patients that they prescribed metronidazole to and get them back in for a follow-up quickly. This is a screenshot of the metronidazole recall pop-up, so it actually is live. We can push messages and alerts directly into the EHR from the Department of Health, and the query would run overnight, and we can have it live. So if anyone comes in presenting things that the query would encapsulate, it would pop up as a clinical decision support on the right pane, saying, see where the registry alert is, a DOHMA alert for metronidazole. You could see in the current medications, he was prescribed a 250-milligram metronidazole tablet. So this alert would pop up only for patients that fit the criteria for this query. And then when you click on the alert, you can actually get a pop-up with a hypertext link to the actual HON alert at the CDC. And then in the email, which would be up in this box, it would explain how to find those patients that you prescribe this metronidazole to and recall them. So then the link just to show how the link, you can directly click on it and read what the actual information was in the alert. At the moment, the FDA is hosting this alert for some reason. It's not on the CDC site anymore. So just to conclude, new types of health information technology, such as this hub system, it allows us to analyze real-time chronic disease rates and syndromic data, as well as ask any clinical questions that the data exists for, and get answers back in real time, and then stratify them by anything, by zip codes, by practices, by provider, by anything. So aligned with the goal of improving population health, targeted triaging increases the rate of adherence to quality measures while providing insight into real-world issues, preventing providers from doing their best. Like, what is happening? Why aren't providers, getting mammograms, giving out proper lab tests for people who fit the criteria? Anonymized clinical data collected from electronic progress notes is extremely insightful and valuable. It allows us to monitor community health in real time. What is the health of New York City? How are we doing? We can find the BMI rates today and then find it out a year from now or tomorrow, the next day, diabetes, anything, any ICD-9 code we can query on. But most importantly, the hub is designed to be able to manipulate and recreate study areas on the fly. Like I said, zip codes, groups, UHF tracks, boroughs, etc., to validate and compare to other sources such as the census, community health surveys, NYC Haines, and a plethora of other electronic data sources. And I think this effort, even though I did a broad overview of the tool, it's very useful. And as a health department, we would love to collaborate with other health departments and organizations such as POLIS and with groups such as where Brian works to do more of a geospatial analysis, maybe share best practices with the rest of the country in a system like this that we don't think exists. we know it doesn't exist, at least not functionally. So that's it. And any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and we've already done. Sorry, I'll repeat the question. Sure. The question was: what are our plans, or do we currently use any other data sources, geospatial data sources, to see what the effect is on the quality of care, or how geographic or ecological factors affect health? And what we did is one of our first studies was to plot fast food restaurants over the BMI, the high BMI area rates for each zip code, and it was obviously astounding. You know, the higher the density of fast food, BMI rates are up, diabetes is up, BP control is down, and so exactly, we do a lot of alignment with our community health surveys. The New York City Department of Health does a huge effort in sending out community health surveys and asking questions such as that, like, do you have access to healthy food? Do you have access to green areas, walking spaces? Do you have a park near you? Is there a lot of noise where you live? And we are aligning our study areas with their study areas so we can directly put them together. And that also on a national scale, but that's for the future. Thank you. Yes? I'm sorry, I didn't catch your second question. So, to answer that, I'd have to refer back. I'm sorry, the first question, one more time, I can't hear you. Right. So non-structured data, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, yes, thank you. So the first question was, can we ask questions in the clinical record about things that aren't structured? We call them structured versus unstructured. Structured you can query on. Non-structured is basically free text notes that the doctor would write. Most of the data that goes into this specific EHR, eClinical Works, is structured because we set it up that way, so we can be able to query many more data points than other EHR systems. But you're right, we can't query on a lot of that stuff. However, our syndromic surveillance program, for example, uses free text queries to search for strings of text in the free text fields. So, can we do that? Yes. However, we would be weary because searching for free text and text strings is very taxing on databases, especially with tens of thousands of patients. So we would be weary about that because this runs overnight. The answer is yes, we can do that. It would just have to be a very good use case. To answer your second question, which was in terms of privacy and if there are very, very low numbers of, say, HIV or something, a sensitive data, the way we aligned our study groups and study areas is specifically following HIPAA regulations on if there's less than a certain amount of people in a zip code, you're not allowed to query on that zip code itself for sensitive information. So we, if that is the case for that query, we group zip codes together and then we have a valid and non-invasive or a revealing study area. But very good question. Yes?
Well, can you stand up and yell? The fan on this very computer loud. Is really loud.
That's a great question. So the question was in terms of getting messaging to the patients themselves. And what we have done is we do not collect any patient identifiable information. We're not allowed to. We don't want it. It's very dangerous, as most of you know. What we do recommend to the providers in our messaging to them is here is how you identify this subset of patients using your registry, and then here is how you can create a mail merge and message them, and we document the steps step by step so the provider can contact the patients. We do not contact patients directly. We are more of a community-based organization, hoping that providers would do their duty. And now, if you know meaningful use, one of the measures is getting in letters and information exchange between the provider and the patient. So eClinical Works, the software vendor that we're working with primarily at the moment, has a patient portal, and we recommend to providers and to eClinical Works put this information on the portal available to all the patients who log in. So if there is a pertinent alert, they can log in and see it and say, hey, you know, you're one of these patients who was, you know, in the subset of this query of this alert or something like that, and then they can, hopefully the doctor would have called them first, or they can call their doctor and have a follow-up. But we don't do messaging to patients, but we do a lot of messaging to providers themselves, and they do like it. They like getting messages from us because they're always pertinent and it tells them exactly what to do and how to get better at what they're doing. So thank you for your question. Is there one more? Yes. So if I can clarify, the question was, our population of patients are on an EHR, eClinical Works. I believe she asked, how can we look at patients who are not on an eClinical Works or an EHR and to see the difference in the adherence to these clinical quality measures? The answer is we can't with our data, but we can try to use our data to align with existing data sources and see if there is a difference with so clinical decision support. That there was a big, you know, questions about: does it work? Is it effective? Are EHRs effective? Are they just expensive and you know money makers, or do they actually improve quality of care? And then even further, clinical decision support pop-ups for men who are over 45. Here, get your, you know, this person needs to call a colonoscopy, and a pop-up right on the screen. You know, so can we compare? The answer is yes and no. We can't directly compare it with our data in real time to the real time data of eClinical Works practices because we can't access that data. But we can access the surveys and the NHANES data and all these other data sources and then compare them at the levels that we have matched them up on. So we haven't done a real study yet comparing non-EHR patients to our patient population. We would hope that our outcomes are better. I would believe so. If the rates have been rising for patients who are in an electronic health record, one might assume that the baseline is similar for patients. The starting baseline is similar for patients not on an electronic health record, but we can't make that assumption. Right, so as I said, I could even go back to the slide if you'd like real quick. We have over 40 quality measures that we put into the electronic health record. And if I could just pull it up. These aren't even close to all of them. It's a subset. So the way we do our quality measure data intake is monthly and yearly. Monthly is what happened this month. The patients that came in, who was out of control, then who was controlled, that's the data we get. Yearly is better because the query tracks a patient over the year. So there's no double counting. There's no double dinging providers for if a patient came in, had their blood pressure controlled for that month, and then the next month they came in, they had a visit, but it wasn't controlled yet, they would get dinged twice for not controlling that BP. But it takes a long time, you know, maybe a few months of medication to control blood pressure. So the yearly data shows in this year, it does a look back of a whole year back and a whole year forward, saying, did this one patient, did they come in presenting out of range BP? Then did it get controlled in that year? So it's yearly data and monthly data. The monthly you can't add together because the denominators wouldn't match up, because patients come to see their doctor more than once, you know, in a year. So, but does that answer your question? Thank you. Anyone else?
Questions? I have one.
Surely.
Since you were using the same EHR for all patients, I'm just wondering if any local customizations in an individual clinician's office caused you headaches in writing a general query to apply to every system.
Okay, that's a good question. One of the biggest headaches is working with, although we're working with one EHR right now, we are in the process of getting this hub system working on five other EHRs, and we made the technical specs, and they're about to adhere to them. The eClinical Works was the trial, you know, and the one of the issues was, if anyone knows anything about databases, they have multiple types of databases for similar practices. So the back end, one would be MySQL, and one would be MSSQL. So the queries don't exactly mesh well with each other. They won't work. They won't run on certain practices. So we created an in-house tool that we programmed ourselves to take all the different types of databases, and then we make our clinical question, and then it generates the query itself, and then we have a medical doctor check that it's valid on both ends for this type of query and another type of query. So yes, it is a very big headache, but nothing that we couldn't, you know, overcome with a lot of hard work and long hours. I did a lot of that work. But thank you, yes. Any other questions?
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.